Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the IPH half-yearly results announcement. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. There will be a presentation followed by a question-and-answer session, at which time, if you wish to queue for a question, you will need to press zero followed by one on your telephone. Please note that this conference is being recorded today, the 26th of February, 2015. I'd now like to hand the conference over to your host, Mr. David Griffith, Managing Director.
Oh, thank you very much, and welcome everybody, and thank you for taking the time to dial into our first presentation since our listing. We're pleased that everything seems to be going quite nicely. We had a successful listing in November last year, as I'm sure you're all aware, and over the last few months, and I'm sure that all the investors are aware that the benefits of the the declining Australian dollar or the rising US dollar have certainly helped our operations both in Australia and Asia. And the general feeling seems to be that the Australian dollar is not going to rise anywhere significantly in the near future. So I'm sure we'll continue to benefit going forward. The operations in Asia are going, I think, exceptionally well, and maintaining their strong growth, and we're very proud of that operation, and there's a lot more gas in the tank there. The Australian market per se is a little bit softer, but by and large this is not a market that has any great ups or downs in it, unless there's some regulatory change like there was in 2013. So it's more what to say steady as she goes for Australia, and that's what we've always expected. We've been able to produce a pro forma net profit after tax of $13.4 million, which is translates to earnings per share of 8.5 cents. Our underlying earnings are in line with our prospectus forecasts, bearing in mind that the prospectus had a formula in there for our sensitivity to foreign currency movements. Our pro forma operating cash flow is somewhere around the $18.7 million mark, and we have net debt of $8.5 million. So with that in mind, the board of IPH is pleased to announce a dividend of 3.5 cents per share, of which 2.5 cents is franked. And the last highlight I'd like to mention is that we're very pleased that Malcolm Mitchell has had a look at us for a few months now. He started as our interim CFO, and he obviously likes the look of what we're doing and hasn't run away, so we're very pleased that he's accepted the position on a permanent basis. So Malcolm has a great depth of experience and knowledge, and we're so pleased that he's agreed to come on board on a permanent basis. Now, with that, I'll hand over to Dr. Andrew Blattman, who is the director of our Asian operations as well as the Australian Spruson and Ferguson. I guess the one other point I'd like to put in here, not listed in the highlights, but before we went to this IPO, when people look at the market, look at the Slater and Gordons and the Shines, who are, the two closest comparatives, slightly different industries, but people were expecting us to acquire other firms probably. Well, as we said at the time, we'll certainly be looking at that, and all I can report at this stage is that we're in very good discussions with a number of other firms, both in Australia and in Asia. We hope something will come of it on more than one front, but there's nothing more to report at this stage than we certainly have some people interested of our competitors in joining us, and we'll just have to see where that road takes us. But right now, all of that is certainly work in progress. I'll pass over to Dr. Andrew Blattman now. Thank you.
Oh, thanks, David, and welcome everyone to this morning's presentation as well. I'm just on slide 6 of the presentation, the operations update. As David's indicated, Australia is probably in a steady-as-she-goes position. We've retained the number one market share with patent filings. The total patent applications filed are essentially in line with what was done last year. As David's indicated, the trademark applications a little bit softer. We think they will normalise going forward, and that last couple of years we had a fairly strong filing program that was undertaken in the South Pacific region, where a number of our clients took probably the first opportunity to file in that region, and that filings have essentially been completed, at least at the house mark level. We see some recovery in that space with some recent client wins in the trademark area, primarily being led by some work done by the patent side of the business that's dragged across some opportunities in trademarks. As David has indicated, the revenue in Australia is up, primarily due to our position against the strengthening US dollar. Asia is, again, we're number one, retained a position for patent filing in Singapore. The total patent applications filed through the Singapore office for the Southeast Asian region, I'm pleased to say, is up on last year, 7% up. We have, and it'll be reflected in Malcolm's presentation, we have an increase in revenue up against budget, which has probably been driven on two bases for that increased file, or three bases, increased filing and increased examination. We've had increased filings in Asia for a number of years, which is now compounding into a increased opportunity for examination, where we're getting more examiners' reports, more responses, which are just reflecting the lag of the increased filings over the last few years. So that's driving the revenue in Asia. Plus, of course, we've also got a stronger US dollar effect in Asia as well. So that's the operations update. The snapshot, I know some of you, it's on slide 7, some of you have seen this slide before from the roadshow. I know we have some new investors that may not have come across it, so I'll briefly just move through it, albeit quickly. You can see from the first line item that we're a patent procurement business. 87% of revenue sits in the patent space. It's a patent transaction business. As many of you are aware, there's multiple revenue opportunities across the life cycle of that, of the application process, whether it be filing, examination, responding to examiner's reports multiple times in some instances, acceptance, grant, and then flipping over into that renewals type income for the 20-year opportunity for patents, should the patent be maintained for the full 20-year term. So, as what I said in the roadshow, I'll say it again here, this is what differentiates us from some of the other our friends in this sector, in that we're not a whip accrual business. As you know, we're a do and charge business, and do charge and collect. As we said last time, it's a 75,000 bills a year business with a consistent recurring income stream. So we service charges are hourly rate or fixed rates, multiple currencies billed, although primarily in Asia, US dollars, with the exception of our local clients in Asia, which are Singapore clients, which are in Sing dollars. As I said before, market position number one for Australia and Singapore for patents. Offices, as you're aware, Sydney and Singapore, Kuala Lumpur, and a representative office in Shanghai. All the work's done in Singapore for the Southeast Asian region. That is our hub. That's where we have the 17% corporate tax rate. It's a very attractive position for the 19 countries we service throughout the Southeast Asian region. The Australia operates across multiple services, patents, trademarks, and litigation, or legal services, litigation, commercialisation. And as you're aware, Asia at this stage is patent only, and we have an opportunity to reopen a trademark business in November this year. The next slide, slide 9, is just reflecting the hub strategy, which is I've really spoken to briefly in the previous slide. We have two hubs, Sydney servicing Australia, New Zealand, and the South Pacific, Singapore serving the rest of the Southeast Asian region and into China. What defines our success in Southeast Asia is dropping in the 127-year service history of Spruson & Ferguson into the Southeast Asian region. I'll quickly just go on to slide 9, this, who are our clients. Some of you have seen that slide before, and I'll just quickly go through it because we're proud of it. We have 125 Fortune 500 companies as clients, either direct or through associate. We think these are some of the best clients in the world, and they're new and old economy clients, whether it be the BASFs, the Roche, the Mercks, the Amgens, the Genentechs, the Facebooks, or the Shells, the Siemens, the Hondas, the Chevrons, the Dows, the 3Ms, or the Kimberly Clarks, the Boeings and Canons. Wonderful clients. And the strength of our business is that the largest client reflects no more than 2.6% of revenue, and the top 20 clients reflect about 20% of revenue. And as we've said in the roadshow, and as you're aware now, these clients are very sticky to the firm. And of the top 20 clients, 16 of the top 20 have been clients for over 25 years. So moving on to slide number 10, the future growth initiatives. Most of you know what it is. We have Asia as our growth engine, and it continues to be, so we can hope to maintain or simply grow market share in Singapore, and we expect the market size in Singapore to continue to grow with a 10 to 20% growth foreshadowed in the next 5 years. Singapore, we've got a good market share, 24%. The rest of Southeast Asia is our opportunity, and we want to get those up in the near future. As I said before, recommence trademarks in Southeast Asia and continue to leverage our relationships across the client databases in Australia and Singapore, and indeed, should we get some acquisitions on the board to leverage their clients into Asia as well. IT continues to be driving our efficiencies. It's done so with case management systems for 30 years, and we'll do more of that to even drive our margins further. As David's indicated, we do have the opportunity to acquire, and that is a discussion which gathers pace for us. And we're acutely aware of the first mover advantage that we have, and we don't intend to squander that. Other secondary markets, as we said before, we have to replicate what we've done in Southeast Asia, elsewhere in the world. And I'll leave the slides 11 and 12, the investment highlights, for you to read at your leisure. And at this point, I'll hand on to my colleague, Malcolm Mitchell, Group CFO.
Thank you, Andrew. The presentation I'm going to talk to starts from page 14 of the slides that were released to the Stock Exchange this morning. And the first slide that's there is a fairly complicated one, but it's necessary for it to be so because of the complex goings-on in the business over the last 6 months to first of all, restructure the business to take it out of a unit trust, unconsolidated unit trust structure, and move it into a corporate structure, which was then listed on the stock market. So there's a lot of moving parts in this result. And obviously, the statutory income results, which you see on the left-hand side of the page, has taken up all these movements in the result. What I've been trying to do in this slide is to dissect it out and to give us numbers which were done on the same basis as the pro forma figures that were put in the prospectus. And so if we run through the columns quickly that take you from statutory to the pro forma results, the second column there on the slide is the restructuring and IPO adjustments. The largest part of that is the $3.4 million that we've incurred in IPO costs that have been put through the P&L of the company. And also there are recognition amounts that go through the P&L to establish leave balances for the principals and to establish the start of the incentive scheme, the long-term incentive scheme that was put in place during the IPO. The second column is just bringing into one of the entities that wasn't consolidated in the statutory numbers up until the restructuring, and that's the SNF Lawyers business. And the final column is a notional adjustment that we've done. It's the same numbers that were appeared in the prospectus, and that is to adjust to annualize, if you like, the result in respect of the compensations being paid to the principals, and also the fact that the company is now a public company and incurs greater costs to be able to run that structure. So that takes us to the pro forma figure, and comparing that to giving us a result of 18.3 on the EBITDA line, and comparing that to a pro forma figure from the previous corresponding period of 14.5, obviously a considerable jump. But as David Griffith mentioned earlier, we are benefiting strongly from the foreign exchange movements, and what the column 3 from the right in the presentation does is to extract the effect. In other words, to normalize the pro forma result back to what it would have been had the currency not moved. And in other words, applying the assumptions that were in the prospectus for the exchange rates for the US dollar and for the Singapore dollar. And so that gives us what is an indication of what's the underlying result or the constant currency earnings in that second last column, and we've compared that to the full year prospectus. I should say at this point, we're very comfortable that the group is in a good position to meet its prospectus, and obviously with the foreign exchange effect, we're anticipating that's not going to be an issue for us. If I can turn to the next slide on page 15. We have here the segment breakdown, and I think the story here is where Asia's moved to. Asia is obviously a strong part of the business, strong growth part of the business, and it's the EBITDA contribution from Asia for the half year, in fact, exceeded the Australian business. The Australian business does carry costs which the Asian business doesn't have. It carries IT costs, it carries corporate office costs, it carries some senior management costs that do work for in across the Asian business as well, and so it's not a they're not directly comparable businesses, but still it's an impressive story from the Asian business. If we can turn now to page 16, this slide's been introduced really to help the analysts. A lot of the questions I've been receiving is to try and understand, to pick apart the currency effects. And this is information that was not fully set out in the prospectus, but allows the analysts to go and build models and understand the sensitivities. And I think the most important thing that comes out of this, obviously, there's first of all, we've got 65% of the revenue is in U.S. dollars, so a strengthening U.S. dollar is obviously a benefit. But the other message that I'd like to draw people's attention to is that the Singapore dollar costs are actually exceed the Singapore dollar income we have. And so what might not be intuitive is that a Singapore dollar strengthening actually reduces our profits. So it's an interesting aggregation of the currency movements, and I hope that slide will help analysts to build something and allow them to see how the earnings will move given different currency assumptions. If we turn to page 17, I won't take too long there. It's just a pictorial view of the results that were shown on page 14, showing the revenues and how that's moving. Again, it sort of highlights the strength of the Asian business when you compare its 13.7 million revenue against for a full year in FY14 against 9.5 that it has delivered in the 6 month period. So it's obviously on track to do well. The page 18, we have a slide here which is just putting the numbers out of for the patent filings and the trademark filings, which Andrew has talked to. But then the numbers are there displayed on the page. Obviously, just updating a table that was contained in our prospectus forecast. If we turn to page 19, again using the same principles that I was applying on the explanation of the profit and loss result, we've got a statement there breaking out the statutory cash flow and taking it through to a pro forma cash flow. I think really the strong message of this group is, you know, we have low capex and minimal working capital requirements, and that strong cash generation allowing the group to pay strong dividends. And so the dividends in the period, just to remind those the investors from the time of the prospectus, there was an extra dividend to paid during the half year to bring all dividend payments up to the point of the reconstruction and IPO. So there's the dividend, the actual cash that has been paid out. In the half year was $22.1 million, and that was all set out in detail in the prospectus if you want to go back and understand how that all came together. Moving to the balance sheet, again for the analysts to help them understand how the reconstruction and has affected the opening position, we've taken the statutory balance sheet that was there at 30 June 14 and applied the balance sheet adjustments that are appropriate for the eliminate the reconstruction and the movements that took place from the reconstruction and IPO to give us a sort of a pro forma starting balance sheet for July this year, and then comparing that to where we stand today on a statutory basis. And the last slide that I'd like to talk to is just again another one for the deep diving analyst to understand the movement on the equities and how that was affected by the reconstruction that we went through, and taking us through to where we stand today. On that basis, I'd like to hand back to David to conclude.
Oh, thanks very much, Malcolm. I think perhaps we can probably move now to the questions if people are happy to do so.
And thank you, gentlemen. Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the question and answer session. If you wish to queue for a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your telephone and wait for your name to be announced. If you wish to cancel your question, just press 0 followed by 2. Okay, now we have a question. Our first question comes from the line of Sam Haddad at Bell Potter. Please proceed with your question.
Good morning, gentlemen, and congratulations on a good first result since listing, and particularly a strong result in Asia.
Thanks, Sam.
Just a few questions from me. First of all, on the Asia front, can you please give any colour in terms of your constant currency revenue growth that you achieved in the half, because it feels like you're sort of over tracking ahead of where prospectus is sort of the indications in the 13% that was quoted in prospectus.
Sam, the Asian business is clearly performing better relatively than the Australian business compared to what the prospectus numbers are. And off that foreign exchange effect that I identified on page 14 of the slides, the effect on revenue of $2.2 million, a larger part of that would have been Asia. They have a bigger part of their revenue denominated in U.S. dollars, and so they've had a greater benefit from the rising U.S. dollar. Does that answer it?
And I suppose I can work out the growth rate from using that.
Yes.
Just on the margins, assuming currencies remain constant from here, but moving forward, what do you believe the margins in Asia are sustainable at these levels?
Oh, David here, Sam. Yeah, sure, we've got no reason. I mean, like all industries, people are trying to get their providers to do more for less, but we're doing pretty well on volume, but also maintaining our margins. So we're not under any particular pressure there more than anywhere else. I mean, the competitive nature of the Asian situation is because our offering is having properly qualified patent attorneys there. The old story, people are prepared to pay for the right people doing their work. So there's not a huge amount of competition that's driving the prices down. I mean, there are a lot of people do it for a lot less than us, but the clients don't want to use them.
Sam, it's Andrew here. Just to add to that that point, you might recall from the roadshows that we indicated that we'd implemented the Inprotect case management system into the Southeast Asian practice in the last couple of years, and that's coming on stream in recent times, such that we think that that will assist in margin or maintaining those margins going forward, because it's a system that we brought in when we took full ownership of that business in 2012, and it's coming on stream now in a consistent manner to what we're running down here and have done for quite a suitable period of time in the Sydney office.
Okay. And I could just add on in that same theme that we are constantly reviewing our total staffing and levels in different offices and seeing where the investment we've made in IT has changed people's work practices and whether we can extract more value from what we're doing here. And I'm sure in the next year we'll be able to achieve some reasonable overhead reductions in Australia as well as Singapore.
Yeah. And just sticking with the Asia front, in regards to your trademark growth opportunity in that market, I understand that you can start to pursue this from this November onwards. I just want to get some more colour on your thinking there in terms of timeline, what investments required and staffing planning to progress through that strategy.
Sam, you're correct. It is from November onwards. We're actually in some discussions with people now, just exploring different opportunities up there. We're sort of still formulating our plans. I mean, we have a big US, Japanese and European client base for trademarks from through the Australian practice, and the thing is primarily to leverage off them. The investment isn't huge. It's just probably a couple of professional staff members and a bit of support staff to start with. But depending on which way we take it, if we can do a deal with somebody up there who's already got a small practice, then that's one possibility. But we're not talking about millions of dollars here. It's a very modest entry point. So it's really leveraging off our existing business.
Yeah. And just a final question for myself. In light of the recent FX movements, have there been any discussions with your clients around service fee rates, or are clients mainly focused on their local currency charge rates only?
One foreign client who's not particularly significant, but did say, you're going to reduce your prices in the US dollar regime. That's out of thousands of clients. And, we said, well, no, not really, unless it's particularly worrying you. And we didn't hear any more. Otherwise, it's total silence. And the fact is, they're just all accustomed to seeing US dollar fees. It's a bit like iron ore, I guess, except probably a bad example in this current climate with iron ore prices. But, they're sold globally, we're sold locally. But it is just that, like many other things, a lot of this work is denominated in US dollars or euros, and that's what people find it simple to deal with, and then they don't have to worry about currency at their end.
Just an anecdote from me on that one, Sam, Sander again. I've seen a couple of clients in recent times ask us whether we can reissue an Australian dollar bill in US dollars. So I don't think it's been too much of a problem.
Right. So there's no sort of formal review process, or is it just ongoing discussions with clients on that front?
Well, there's really no discussions. We just charge in US dollars, and that's what they're happy to accept. And by and large, they don't think about it. You've got to remember that these countries are small parts of very big portfolios, and the activity levels, yes, they don't, they're always interested in saving money like any client, but by and large they're happy just to, as long as the fees are more or less the same, they're not running out, around for watching the Australian dollar currency situation. They, most of these people in America and Europe wouldn't even know what's going on in our profession with the Australian dollar. It's only if they came here for a holiday they say, oh, that's cheap.
So on that basis, your sensitivities and your perspectives are still current?
Correct.
Just okay. On that.
Thank you very much.
If I could just complete the answer to that question, the sensitivities in the prospectus indicated the US dollar appreciating and the Singapore dollar appreciating were both a benefit to the group. That's a correct statement for the US dollar. But if you take that slide that I presented on page 16, the Singapore situation is more complex because we actually are carrying more Singapore dollar costs than we have Singapore dollar income. The majority of the income in Asia is U.S. dollars. And so a Singapore dollar strengthening, all other things being equal, would actually be a negative. So it's just something I'm just trying to get the analysts to understand that dynamic in the currency exposures we have.
Thank you very much for your help. Much appreciated.
Not a problem.
Thank you, Sam. Ladies and gentlemen, once again, if you wish to ask a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your touch-tone phone. We have a question. It comes from the line of Alexandra Clark at Morgans. Please proceed with your question.
Hi, guys. Congratulations. Just following on from Sam's questions, can you just remind us what the usual skew is in the business on a constant currency basis between first half, second half?
Oh, we've never actually been conscious of any dramatic change much one way or the other, Alex. I mean, we're Northern Hemisphere focused, and of course they tend to go on holidays in August, so that's a bit quieter. Then we have our Christmas and our January where people are away from work more on our holidays, so you've got less actual people in the office doing things. But in blended in the year, I would think that the second half is probably a wee bit stronger than the first half. But it's not you know, strongly seasonal.
Yeah, okay.
Thank you, Alexandra. At this stage, ladies and gentlemen, we have no further questions, so I might remind participants to press 0 and 1 on your touchtone phone should you wish to ask a question. That has resounded with Lachlan Morgan from Morgans. Lachlan, please proceed.
Oh, I was just wondering about the acquisition strategy. Could you possibly just touch on the opportunities you're looking at, if you could, and in what locations generally are you looking at them?
Well, without divulging anything that's particularly secret, but we're looking at firms in Australia, in other geographical locations, and these are what you might describe as it's not a huge profession. We've got about four firms in the top group, and then you've got a group of maybe six or eight firms in the next group down, and then you've got smaller, and then a lot of sole practitioners. So we're not talking really to any sole practitioners, but we're after the quality firms in the group just below us, and we're not talking to any of the top line competitors. But we think we can acquire in the next whether 6 months or a year, quite a bit more percentage business of the Australian market. But we're also looking closely at Asia, because that's our the areas where we can add value. And so in that regard, we think we've got a reasonable opportunity to open offices or acquire smaller practices in some of the Southeast Asian countries. You've always got national laws and about foreign investment. These sort of things are ones that are different from country to country and different tax regimes. But by and large, you know, we're hoping to be able to do more in one big Asian country in particular, bearing in mind we'll never have an office in North America, Japan, or Europe. So we're really quite active in discussions with people in a number of these areas. I hope that answers your
question. Ladies and gentlemen, I beg your pardon, sorry.
Oh, I guess I hope that answers the question adequately.
Again, ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your touch-tone phone. And I'll advise the speakers at this stage, we have we do have a question. It's popped up from Anthony Hung at Morgan's. Anthony, please proceed.
Hi, David. Just wondering if you're aware of any other of your top-line competitors following the same route of the IPO at this stage?
No direct knowledge of that, Anthony. There was a thing in the paper, the Fin Review, a few weeks ago, I think, but a lot of them, with their legal structures and their spread of partners, they'll find it extremely difficult. And also, without any Asian operations, they're sort of, by and large, all pretty mature businesses and would find it very hard to list. I suspect it's a better option for them to join us, except for the big ones. But we would, I think, find their structures a bit hard and to blend in with us. So that's why we're not really engaging with our, even though they're good friends of ours, our major competitors. And until something pops up, we'll be the last to know, I guess. But certainly there's, I think they're all watching us very closely, saying, oh, gee, I wish we could have done that. But they don't have a way of doing it. So I suspect that they can go around thinking about it for a while, but they'll find it very hard to muster all of the emotions that are needed to get a whole group of people into a like-minded way to do a listing. And there's a lot of compromises have to be made along the way when you're coming from a partnership. And so we had a long road in getting everybody on board with that. And so it's not something that can just happen quickly, like where you would have, say, one or two owners or four or five that own a business. They can get together pretty quickly and make a decision. But most of the other significant firms have got a lot of people, and they're not in a corporate structure, and they've got to look at how their rollover situation is tax-wise, and there are many implications that take a long time to work through. But long-winded way of saying, no, I don't know of anything else going on.
Thanks, David. And just one more question, just following on from what Alex was asking. I note in the presentation, obviously, the prospectus forecasts of the patent files, are both running a little bit behind in terms of below 50%. Are you guys still confident of hitting that number?
Sorry, what was the 50%?
The patent filings. They're below the 50% of the target.
We would hope so. The target was framed on what we thought would be filed at IP Australia this year. We had this extraordinary year in 2013 with the changes to legislation, what was called the raising the bar, where a lot of cases were brought forward. And the total number of cases filed in Australia, we just tried to do some sort of forward prediction based on averaging out over the last few years and trying to get a trajectory, and the number we estimated was a little bit higher than what's actually happening at IP Australia. So, it's a market that's down a little bit on forecast, and so we're sort of caught in that same just general mix of things, because, as you know, none of our clients are more than a couple of percent of our business. So it's coming, it's not like one big client suddenly stopped filing. We're not really sensitised to that in any way.
Sure. I think I think now we've got the event behind us from last year, which took up a bit of bandwidth of a few people, including people like myself. We're ready to go with a fairly strong marketing position going forward, and I think we should be in good shape to drive that market even harder now. So we've got our professional staff aligned by changing in the structure, which we think has been one of the great outcomes of the listing, was to change the nature of the professional firm structure for our professional staff. We've got short-term and long-term incentives in place for a number of the senior staff, and it will only go further. So I think now it's game on for us, and I think we can drive those filings harder.
Awesome, and congratulations again.
Thank you.
Thanks, Anthony. Ladies and gentlemen, if you wish to ask a question, please press 0 followed by 1 on your touchtone phone. I can advise at this stage there are no further questions.
Okay. Oh, that's good. Well, thank you, everybody, for your interest in our practice, and I can assure you that we're not resting on any laurels here. We're going absolutely hammer and tong to develop this business for all the shareholders, and it's an exciting time for us. And, you know, going through the change from the traditional practice model to this corporate structure has been very positive. I might just add that we haven't lost any professional staff, and they're all more enthused, I think, and see a brighter future for them than was the case in the traditional model. So we're pretty excited about that. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes the IPH half-yearly results announcement. Thank you for participating. We now kindly request you disconnect your lines.